We're going to talk now with a newly elected MEP for Ireland South, one of our newly elected MEPs, and that is independent, former independent deputy Michael McNamara, although I think he's still a deputy for a while yet. Michael McNamara, good morning to you, and listen, congratulations on your win and your run for Europe.
Good morning, Gerry, and thanks very much, and also thanks very much for having me on your show. When I announced the run initially back, I know it's about eight weeks ago now.
How did that 7 and 8 weeks go? Did you learn anything?
Well, I learned about the importance of being organised when it was too late to get organised, I suppose. I mean, it's a huge constituency. Every election is different in terms of, like, a general election is quite different from a local election, is quite different from a European election. A European election is, to a large extent, a logistical feat. Posters are important in all elections. I know there's an ongoing debate about posters and why do politicians put their faces up, but they're particularly important in places if you're a new candidate or you're not very well known. And I suppose in large parts of the constituency, or in almost all parts of the constituency, I was a new candidate, and I mean, posters are important in that context. Getting them up was a big logistical feat. Getting around, canvassing, trying to meet as many people as possible in as many parts of the constituency while continuing to fulfil the functions of a TD, I suppose, was required a lot of organisation, and those who know me would probably say it's not my strong point.
Well, that didn't matter in the end. You amassed the votes, a very competitive field, two MEPs unseated, and you managed to make it.
Yeah, and obviously, there's I feel personally very sorry for the MEPs that lost their seats. I mean, I've experienced losing a seat. It's a very difficult feeling. It's a very, I suppose, public rejection, and they were people, I think, who both of them. Who stood up for what they believed in. You mightn't agree necessarily, and obviously some people didn't agree with what they believed in, but they had the courage in their convictions to stand up for what they believed in throughout, and I think that's commendable. And on a personal level, it's, you know, I feel very sorry to see them. You feel sorry to see anybody lose their seat, but I think particularly people who stood up for what they believed in throughout.
Yeah, and is that part of your priority now when you go into Europe, that you will be, I suppose, fighting what you talked about during the campaign? You've highlighted the issues around farmers' rights, energy development, data protection laws, and other things.
Yeah, and they're all, I mean, obviously they're all very different things, and that are discussed at different committees, but I think they're all hugely important to Ireland and the constituency of Ireland South. Obviously we have a huge agricultural sector. It's been the backbone of the economy of Ireland South for a very long time, since long before Irish independence. Data and the importance of tech companies is obviously a much newer development, but nonetheless they are hugely important. I mean, the majority of big sort of North American tech companies have their European headquarters in Ireland, so Ireland is where sort of the rubber hits the road, where the laws that are made in Europe actually get applied in respect of many of those tech companies. And energy is very important both for Ireland and Europe. I mean, we see the German economy flagging because of the reliance that they closed their nuclear power stations and became very reliant on Russian energy, and that has had a massive impact on their economy. France less so, and of course in Ireland we're not energy self-sufficient. We import quite a lot of energy. There's a lot of talk about developing floating offshore lines. Board have very ambitious plans, but it's not moving as quickly as one might expect. No. And it's certainly not moving as quickly as many other European countries, where investors are coming to Ireland because of the theoretical possibilities here, but unfortunately moving on and going to other states like Portugal and in particular Scotland to invest, because things are moving more quickly there.
And do you think you can have an impact on that? I mean, you're one of 720 MEPs. You're an independent. Can you have an impact on that?
I think you can, because, I mean, I'm one of 14 Irish MEPs, and, I mean, You know, I will continue to raise issues that are important to me in the same way that a TD does and can, and highlight issues that I think need to be developed. Energy policy is developed at a European level in one of the committees there, as are, you know, there's an agriculture committee, there's a LIBE committee is the one that starts to determine data protection rights. So I think as a legislator you can have an impact. Obviously you're one of 700, but on the other hand, I mean, in Ireland, it seems to me increasingly that you're either one of 12 to 14 in cabinet, or you're not. And I mean, the other 156 or 166, as it's about to become, TDs and the Dáil have very little role once a piece of legislation is approved at cabinet. It's kind of rammed through regardless, and amendments are, no matter what their merits are, they're not really, sometimes they're not even discussed, like in that planning bill that was guillotined last week on Wednesday. Sometimes you know, they're not even discussed. So I mean, I think you can have an impact. Unfortunately, I think the way the Dáil is evolving in Ireland, the possibility of having an impact in legislation is lessened and lessened, even though that's the most important thing that TDs, from a constitutional perspective, that's the most important thing that they're required to do, is to, you know, the Dáil and Shannon are the only bodies with the power to make laws for Ireland. And I suppose one thing that I was struck by on the campaign trail is, you know, the history of the constituency. I mean, obviously I'm from Clare, and I know the history of Clare, Kerry, the Midwest, but you know, when you go to Boulevogue, you go to Carlo and all these places, and you see the sacrifices that were made. I mean, I happened to stay one night in the Knockmeldown Mountains, and it was very near where Liam Lynch
met his
died.
End. Yeah.
So I mean, you know, people did sacrifice that, and I just find it sometimes frustrating the extent to which power is becoming increasingly centralised in Ireland, not in the Dáil, unfortunately, but in the permanent government and the cabinet that interact with them, and everybody else. It becomes sort of, to a certain extent, secondary. And of course, local authorities are routinely having more and more powers taken from them, notwithstanding the talent that's there, and the fact that we had local elections recently that were hard fought in every county in Ireland. But the powers that they will exercise are less than they would have been 20 years ago, and considerably less than they would have been 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's for sure. Have you made any decisions yet as to what you will do, what grouping perhaps maybe you will join?
I haven't. I mean, I'm going to talk to a couple of groupings, and we'll take it from there. You know, it'll largely come down to I suppose them being happy with me being happy with them, but also what I can get in terms of committees. I mean, it's in the same way as, you know, in the Dáil. I mean, there's a certain people want to get in committees, and it's the same in the European Parliament.
Yeah, it certainly is. It looks as though the EPP, they've gained 14 seats as things stand at the moment. The Green Movement losing around 19 seats, others kind of gaining seats as well. So it all depends on how that works out in terms of who gets elected. Will you have a say? Do you have a view on Ursula von der Leyen?
I do. I mean, I would find it difficult to... I won't be supporting Ursula von der Leyen. I mean, I just think the stance that she took on Brexit was ham-fisted on one occasion. It displayed a sort of a lack of maybe understanding of what exactly was happening. But then more fundamentally, I just don't agree with offering unequivocal support. I mean, obviously you can offer support, but in a conflict, but unequivocal support is basically an invitation to do whatever you see fit, and we're going to support you anyway. And I just don't think that's an approach that I could endorse.
That looks like, though, she's the head of the EPP. I mean, she's that's the grouping Fine Gael is part of. It looks like the word is she will have the support to get another term this morning, is what we're hearing.
She may have, but I mean, all I can do is exercise my vote on behalf of those who elected me, and I just don't think that I could support Ursula von der Leyen at the moment.
With that in mind,
I mean, also the whole issue around refusing to engage on negotiations that she had with Pfizer. Obviously, that was a hugely it was a huge contract for vast sums of money, which is ultimately taxpayers' money from across Europe, and refusing to provide emails and
you'd like more transparency there.
Well, I think transparency is important. It's hugely important in Europe as it is in Ireland as it is in local authorities.
Yeah, a fine point on the wider context, I suppose, of where Europe is going. We're seeing a swing to the right. Is that fair to say?
In terms of the
sort of groupings, the populist, the anti-migrant, the anti-European even stance of some of the newly elected MEPs.
Yeah, I mean, look, I haven't met any of them yet. I haven't, obviously the Parliament hasn't sat and won't sit until the middle of July. I'm just going to get to Brussels this week. Obviously, you know, I was elected late on Thursday night and certainly wasn't taking anything for granted. I mean, you'd be very sore if you'd gone over conducting negotiations before you were elected. People might think you were, it'd be foolhardy. I'm really just going on media reports, but there seems to have been a slight shift to the right, maybe particularly in France. I think the President Macron's party seemed to lose a considerable amount of support to Marine Le Pen's party, but I don't, from what I'm reading, it was that shift wasn't of the magnitude that
was
predicted and expected.
Maybe a swing away from the green agenda, the environmental issues.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to have been. Now, of course, you know, the environment is, to me, still hugely important, but it's how you deal with it. And I think sometimes, at least in Ireland, there was a lack of understanding of rural Ireland in determining policy up to now. At a European level, I think there was also a lack of understanding, the idea that you could have, and now it's still to be determined whether it will be passed by the council or not, but that you could have a nature restoration law which would require farmers to alter or even abandon farming practices in respective parts of their lands, and that there would be no compensation scheme in place at a European level. I mean, that is simply, you know, fails to understand why farmers are farming more intensively and why they're farming more land, because it's the economic pressures that the market is putting them under, and there seems to be no willingness
to do that.
Farmers are farming much, much bigger and bigger and bigger dairy herds. But like their lifestyle hasn't changed dramatically. They're just working harder, but they're not earning massively more money as a result of it.
No,
that's what the markets are forcing them into.
So, how do we change? How do we change that? I'll give you an example. I was driving home at the weekend, driving home on Friday, and I saw a farmer spreading slurry right next to a river, and there was rain on the way. No. It seemed to me, this is on a micro level now. This is obviously the farmer had to get the slurry out. There's pressure on in terms of regulations. There's pressure on in terms of how many cuts of silage that farmer particularly needed to try and get the silage in so it had fodder for the size of a herd. It's a complex area, but Europe has direct control over it. So is it a question of stopping that farmer doing that, paying more money, or how do you fix that complex problem?
Well, I mean, obviously I didn't see what you saw. I'm not critical of the farm.
I'm just talking. This is the issue of. I'm saying it because we had the water quality report out last week, which showed it's not improving and it's going backwards in some areas in Kerry, and we need to address that as well. And Europe is at the centre of all of that, isn't it?
Are we coming up with these policies? We clearly do need to address it. And agriculture, I think, is the agriculture sector generally is willing to address it. They need help, obviously, from the government to transition to that, but they're willing to do what's required. But, I mean, you know, all of the water quality, I didn't read the one last week, I was just, I'm sorry, but I've read the previous ones, and I mean, they've highlighted the inadequate state of wastewater treatment plants across the country as well.
Yeah.
And I mean,
the
focus is very much on in some of the media, and I appreciate not you, but in some of the media, it's very much solely on agriculture without looking at what the state itself can do. And I think the state itself needs to get its house in order if you're going to ask other sectors to do so. But on the broader issue, I mean, there was an interesting study about a month ago now from UCC where, you know, consumers are requiring or want to eat more and more sustainable food and want to eat more and more food that's more environmentally sensitively produced, but they don't want to pay any more for it. And I mean, that therein lies the difficulty. I mean, if you you can't expect European farmers and Irish farmers to produce food to the highest environmental standards and then compete with imports from other countries that aren't produced to those standards. I mean, and that is a problem. I mean, food, while it is expensive, is historically cheap in terms of the proportion that your average family spends on food is much lower now than it would have been sort of in the 1950s or, you know, at any point historically. It's a much lower proportion of the household income. You know, we need to kind of bear that in mind in terms of there is a cost to producing food, and while food is even though it's historically cheap, it's getting more expensive. But where are the profits going? I mean, there was a European directive that was applied in the Agriculture and Food Supply Chain Bill, of which I was very critical, because I hope I'm wrong, but I don't expect that it's going to result in any transparency in what the retailers, you know, the big Dunnes, Lidl, Aldi, Tesco, what they're paying the processors, and we know what the processors are paying the farmers, it's relatively low. We know what consumers are paying, but we don't know in between, so we actually don't know where the profits are going in the food chain. And so I think unless we can see where the profits are going,
tackle the problem. But do you think finally then we're going to get a better deal for the farmers in terms of if they do have to change, there'll be first of all proper compensation or time to change, that it won't be a cut off overnight, or that they won't be expected to, I suppose, stop what they've been doing for generations without it, like, I suppose, a fair transition, which is a phrase that's used.
Well, I don't know in short, because the Nature Restoration Law has passed through Parliament. It was one of the last acts that the Parliament passed, so the Parliament's done with it at this stage. It's with the Council. It was the Council is comprised of representatives from each government in the European Union. It was being blocked by some of them. There seems to be the Irish government in particular are applying diplomatic pressure to see if they can get it unlocked and get it through. But that'll be something that'll be determined at the Council, which is between the heads of government, as regards the cap and what the next cap will bring. Well, I mean, the overall budget is determined by the states. I mean, because it's taxpayers' money that's sent to Europe. Europe doesn't have the power to levy taxes. So, I mean, it'll be determined between the states what the overall budget is going to be, and then, of course, it'll be divvied up in Brussels. Yeah. But with all this talk that von der Leyen has of increased defence spending, I mean, if you're going to increase spending in one area, it's hard to see how you can... If it's going to be increased dramatically in one area, it's hard to see how it can be increased dramatically in others as well.
Yeah, I suppose that is the case. And look, Michael, just as we're speaking, believe it or not, I think news has come true on the Nature Restoration Law that countries have approved the policy to restore damaged nature after months of delay. It's the first green law to pass since the European Parliament elections this month. So that looks like that has been approved now by the leadership, I suppose, or the council. So that's, I suppose, directly what you were talking about.
Well, I mean, I suppose I'd have to say in response to that we have been repeatedly told by those who voted for it in the Parliament that all of Ireland's requirements would be made up by... But in state-owned lands by Cuilte, Bord na Mona, etc. That now remains to be seen. I hope that will be the case, but I'm not overly confident, because I mean I've seen for example the NSAC and SPA has been drawn up and the map miraculously skirting around Cuilte-owned lands very near where I live. So I mean Cuilte seems to exert quite a lot of power in government buildings, even if you look at the number of afforestation permits that Cuilte get compared to the private sector, the ease with which they get felling licences compared to the private sector. I mean, there does seem to be, Cuilte does seem to have a lot of power in government buildings that ordinary landowners, farmers, foresters don't have.
You feel the balance isn't right there. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I'm not taking this assertion or this sort of platitude that it'll all be dealt with, it'll all be soaked up by Cuilte and Bord na Mona. I'm not taking that at face value based on experience and what I've seen myself with regard to Cuilte and the preferential treatment that they get.
Yeah. Okay. Then, Michael, listen, interesting to chat. Good luck with the job ahead.
Thank you very much.
Talk again, no doubt. That's Michael McNamara there with us on the line. And as I said, just in the last couple of minutes, the news has come true that the European Environment Ministers have signed off on the Nature Restoration Law, finally green lighting the legislation that has been a source of a lot of controversy. The Environment Council discussed the law once again in a meeting in Luxembourg this morning, where Ireland's Minister for Climate, Eamon Ryan, was among the participants to speak in its favour. And it has been rubber stamped now and passed through by the environment ministers at that level. The majority of countries voted this morning to approve the law, with only six countries, Italy, Hungary, Poland, the Netherlands, Finland and Sweden, voting against it.